Hello and welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. You're listening to the podcast for people who want to learn about the government market from the contracting officer's perspective. If you are a contracting officer, we hope to give you a little more insight into industry's perspective. Our mission is to make government contracting better, one contract at a time. Today's episode is sponsored by the Skyway Connection. The topic? Competitive range determinations. Let's get started. Hey, Kevin. Today, we're going to talk about competitive range determinations.
We are. The competitive range determination is one of the many things that's unique to government contracts. It doesn't happen all the time. It happens in certain circumstances. So we're going to walk through the what, the when, and the why of CRDs.
As usual, we'll talk about what it is, what acquisition time zone it's in, and why it matters, why government should care, why industry should care. So first, what is a competitive range determination? So this is FAR 15.306. There's our FAR reference for the day. Exchanges with offerors after receipt of proposals. So what that means is usually after industry has submitted their proposals in response to an RFP, it's a silent phase until the government selects a winner. But there are cases where the government can reach out again and have back and forth with industry. We're going to talk about how that happens here just a little bit. 15306 has A, B, C, and D. So to set the stage, 306A is clarifications and award without discussion. So that means the government has a couple little questions they need to make sure they understand on offers, proposals, and then they make an award. 306B is communications with offers before establishment of a competitive range. So this is a little more in depth, but you're not actually going to discussions, which we'll talk about separately. 15306C, this is competitive range, and this is where the government, and I'm, this FAR quote here, establish a competitive range comprised of all the most highly rated proposals. And we'll get deeper into that. 15306D is exchanges with offers after establishment of the competitive range. And this is discussions or negotiations. And that's a huge topic. We're going to do our best to stay away from today so that we don't get distracted in describing what the competitive range is.
Yes, that's a slippery slope. We'll end up with a six-hour podcast. So talking about that one. Yeah.
So back to what is a CRD. What is, I don't know why I'm acronyming it already. What is a competitive range determination?
So the acronym CRD, competitive range determination, it's really the start of negotiations. In other words, what does it do? Well, it saves the time of those who can't win. The idea is that the government has said, out of the 10 companies that bid, I'm making up these numbers to make the point, you four are going to be in the competitive range for the following reasons. So the six that have really no chance to win, it saves them time. It focuses the efforts of those four who are left. And it gives the government a chance to start negotiations to get even better proposals. And here's the other big thing, and to get down to one. Because most of the time, unless it's a multiple award, that they're going to award more than one company. Most of the time, they're trying to get down to one. They're trying to get from 10 to one. Well, this is how you get from 10 and then to four and then to one. So the competitive range determination is that next step that says, all right, you four are in the competitive range. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what you have to make better. Here's what you have to improve. Here's where your weaknesses are, that kind of stuff.
All right. So before we get deeper into that, let's set the stage for the timing of the determination. What time zone are we in? And if you haven't guessed yet, this is the source selection zone. This is during the government source selection. So during a source selection, you as the offers have submitted a proposal and you as the government have evaluated the initial evaluations of the proposals. So this is where the competitive range determination comes in. The government can kind of draw a cut line and say everybody that's evaluated higher than this gets to move on in the competition. Everybody below this, we're going to let them loose now and let them know that they're not among the most competitive proposals. So then after the competitive range determination, there's discussions, there's final proposal revisions, and a decision and an award, but we're not going to talk about any of that stuff. I just wanted to set this is right sort of in the middle of the source selection process.
Yeah, and a key factor here is that this is when the decision has been made to negotiate, to have discussions. So if the contracting officer and the acquisition team decide, okay, we're going to negotiate, we're going to have discussions, then you shall do a competitive range. And that's in 15306 Charlie. What you mentioned, we're going to get, you know, into the weeds of this particular section here. But really what this says is, contracting officer, if you're going to hold discussions, thou shalt do a competitive range. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. The government has to evaluate all the proposals just like they said they were going to do in Section M. And based on how each one is rated against all those evaluation criteria, the contracting officer establishes a competitive range of the most highly rated proposals. And the trick is, it's up to the CO. This back to the thinking part. This is where the CO and the acquisition team can decide how many proposals do we want to carry forward. Is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 5? And you know, of course, it's different for every single source selection. But there is a little nuance in the FAR in 306C2. We're pretty FAR heavy today. But the CO actually has the ability, if you have a lot of proposals that are very, very similarly rated, the CO can actually select some of them to move on and some of them to not move on. So this is the efficiency exception here, where if there's 20 proposals that are all roughly equivalent, that would take a whole lot of time to evaluate. The CO could actually say, I'm only going to evaluate 5 of these. Now, I don't know how often this is done. I certainly didn't do it in my systems acquisitions days. But it is a possibility that the cut line could be drawn not because of they're evaluated above a certain quality level for proposals, but just because there's too many and we can't evaluate that many.
And so think about what this looks like. And I've had similar situations. I never actually used this reference, but think about what happens. We had 10 companies that came in at least green on the competitive, on the ratings, and had decent past performance. But what it really came down to, and nobody wants to hear this, but it came down to price. Out of 20 companies, because it's very unlikely they all have the same price unless you really have a commodity. But realistically, you could have 20 companies, 10 companies out of that had great technical and great past performance, and then you end up picking the 10 lowest price or the 5 lowest price. And the cynics in the room are saying, oh, well, that's what's wrong with this process. You're picking the lowest price. Okay, I didn't say the lowest price. In fact, maybe even you kick out the one that's the absolute lowest. I kicked somebody out of a competitive range once because they were one-third the price of everybody else. Well, that didn't make any sense because obviously they can't. Now, there were technical issues and it was more complex than that. But going back to the efficiency thing, you can pick, everybody know what a standard deviation is, right? And I actually did this. I used the standard deviation model. I had so many proposals that I decided I need some way to be able to make this make sense, right? So after everything else was said and done, we had most of them were, all of these were at least green. And they could go from, like for example, they could go from green to blue if we went back and said, here are your weaknesses, please fix them. So do you kick somebody like that out? Well, they could be much better. You're giving them a chance to rewrite their proposal. So you don't necessarily want to kick them out. However, if their price was already twice as high or was already, 20% of everybody else's price, something's wrong with this, right? So I used the standard deviation model and said, okay, out of the 15 companies who could be in the competitive range, I'm going to pick, I kid you not, I said, I'm going to pick the ones that are within one standard deviation of the mean price. And my pricer was like, clapping his hands. He thought it was hilarious.
Because you're using fancy math.
Yeah, but I had some kind of means to come up with this. Now, if you think about what that looks like, I still ended up with 7 companies in the competitive range, and my supervisor was actually reviewing my competitive range determination. She said, "Why don't you just pick the middle prices? Why do you have to make this all fancy?" But I needed some math to make sense behind it. So, yeah. Point is, you could push this all over the place, but it's all judgment as far as what is the right number to use to take on a competitive range. And it has a lot to do with the companies that can catch up. You might want to keep them in. The companies that are already ahead, okay, you keep them up. You keep them in. But the companies that can catch up, because maybe they didn't explain something as well as they could have, or some part of their proposal was a little bit unclear, but it's a house of cards where, like, if they explain this one thing better, it's going to be a structure for everything else from the technical approach of, you know, how they build this product or whatever. So, I mean, when you're at the ground level, it's really difficult sometimes to say, okay, this company can't catch up. But at the same time, if their price is five times as high, and okay, five times a stretch. I've had one twice as high. The price was twice as high. And I'm thinking, for the people, and this is a service contract, for the people that we need, the market has proven, based on what I'm seeing here in the other 10 proposals, you don't need to pay them that much. It's very unlikely that, 9 out of 10 people are wrong, and this one guy is the only one that figured out what the rate should be. So all of that discussion is happening, but the point of this, that's why we're keeping this at the focused area of just a competitive range. All the decisions that go into making that competitive range of who's going to stay, this is the shall. Contracting officer shall document this and shall have reasoning behind it. And you could do things like standard deviation if you wanted, but there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Okay, from the industry side, you know, it sounds, you use the right words there. The government likes to make things politically correct and say, we've determined you are eliminated from the competitive range. But you use the right word. The way it's thought of is kicked out of the competition. Right, it's really some because the proposals aren't even close. But from the industry side, what a competitive range determination means is, if you are determined to not be in the competitive range, it means you lost. Right. Yep. So there's still going to be a competition going on where somebody's going to win, but you've already lost. You're out, done, and that's the point where people get angry, people get frustrated, and it's particularly painful because if you're not in the competitive range, you know you weren't even close, right? It's not like, we almost won. It's like, wow, we weren't even close enough to get into the final evaluations. So it is it's just as devastating as if there was no competitive range determination and you just found out that somebody else won. This is the point where you know you lost. Not fun.
And that's a very good point. And that's something for contracting officers to be aware of, what you just said about the idea of when you realize how far off the mark you were that you didn't make the competitive range, that's a significant emotional event. And I didn't realize the difference between losing in the competitive range and losing and during discussions. They both suck for different reasons. I mean, the thing I don't like about losing at the final stage is that you invested even right. More time. It's like, because you can't just walk away. You're still rolling through this whole negotiation. But your point of, if we didn't make the competitive range, we must have really messed this up. So either one, you think, okay, what did we do wrong? And then what often happened, and this is why, for those of you contracting officers and folks who have been sitting in on debriefings, when a pre-award debriefing can be very contentious for this very reason. And I remember a couple of them now it makes sense that why people were so offended, and while they were even more frustrated. I thought I was saving them time because I'm like, dude, you're not going to catch up. I'm kicking you out because you're not going to catch the winner. They're a stronger technical. They have as good a past performance than you, and they're a lot cheaper. So you're not going to catch up. But and then, by the way, they don't get all of that detail during the pre-award. But their defensiveness was over the idea of, how can I not even have made it to the second gate?
So let's go back and talk about the pre-award, post-award debrief thing you were just touching upon. So After when the government makes a competitive range determination, they have to provide a written notice of that decision to all of the unsuccessful offerers, in air quotes, to all of the losers, all the people that have been kicked out of the competitive range, have to get a written notice of it. They also notify the other folks that they're in the competitive range and give them instructions for what comes next. But if you were notified that you are not in the competitive range, you can actually get a debriefing at that point. And there's either a pre-award debriefing, which is right now when I get notified that I'm out of the competitive range, I get a debrief to have explained to me why I'm out of the competitive range, why I wasn't considered one of the most highly rated proposals. Or you can decide to get a post-award debrief. And if you do that, you have to wait until everything's done, and it could be weeks, days, could be months before the final decision is made. But if you wait and get a post-award debrief, then you get a comparison of how your proposal was rated to how the winner's proposal was rated. So you kind of have to decide at that point what kind of information is used for you. You should still get a debrief. And we talked about this back in episodes like 5 and 6, the debriefing part 1 and 2, you should still get a debriefing so you can learn how to make your proposals better in the future. But the amount of information you get varies depending on whether you decide to do it pre or post award. So let's emphasize why this is important. This is important. You have to know that the government doesn't just have to pick a winner. When they get all the proposals, they don't just have to say, this guy won. The government can actually negotiate, and this competitive range determination is the first step in negotiating with the top-rated offerers. And they can choose not to negotiate and not even to talk to anymore the folks that aren't more highly rated.
And the great thing about this negotiation process is, as a contracting officer, I want to get the best product I can. If I got a decent product from company A, so let's say there are 10 companies, we kept three of them in the competitive range. So we'll call them companies A, B, and C. So company A has a strong technical, but their price is crazy high. Company B has a good technical and good past performance, but their price is pretty average, but they had some issues that they needed to clarify, but they could be better. And then company C, their lowest price, but we kind of know why. And we're thinking, you know, you haven't quite met the requirement in these following areas. We need you to beat this up. So let's just say that they're, for the purposes of this conversation, let's say we have a blue and two greens. Okay. Now think about what is the contracting officer trying to do? They're trying to get the best product possible from the best company at the best price. So this negotiation process allows for that because all three of those companies get another bite at the apple. And the cynic says, oh, well, I've heard all these arguments. That's why I love to introduce this mythical character, the cynic. The cynic says, oh, this isn't fair. You're letting the weaker company catch up. But the reality is the stronger company can get even better. And I've done source selections where the company that was the clear winner, okay, they were the clear advantage, say it that way, going into negotiations. Because they had a better, and I chose to do negotiations because I knew they had some things they could make better. And I wanted to clarify this stuff now. I wanted to negotiate with them and say, we can make some of these things better and get an even better end result. Because remember, we talk about this all the time. Spend the time now getting the right contract done the first time instead of just, oh, well, we can award faster. And then you got issues later that are a nightmare to clean up. This is yet another opportunity for the contracting officer to get all three in this story I'm telling, all three of these companies to get better. So what happened, and the example that I'm using here, the company that was in the lead got even better. So their technical came up and their price came down a little bit. And I wouldn't have gotten that if I hadn't gone through the, one could argue the trouble or the effort, but of I would say the value of the competitive range. And this stuff isn't easy, but it can get you going back to what is the purpose of a contract? To connect the person who needs it with the person that can do it. And that's why this is important, is that when this is done properly, not only are you giving the people who are a little bit off the mark another chance, but that person who really hit it out of the park, this is a chance for them to get even better and give you an even better product. And from their perspective, from the offerer's perspective, to even more clearly understand what can I put into my proposal or put into my plan to make this an even better contract after award. Because now that company, in this case, the company that was in the lead in the competitive range ended up winning, but they had an even better understanding of what we wanted. And I got to tell you, this particular story, that contract was a breeze to administer.
So why does the government care about competitive range determinations?
Book answer is out of FAR 15, like we've talked about, is that they can care, but it's not required. A competitive range determination is not required. Now, if there is going to be negotiations, then it's required, but they don't have to have negotiations. So this is, they care because it says that they can care. However, our answer, I'll let you cover that part.
Right. So it's not required, but it is a good tool for source selections to save time. If you have the opportunity to take the proposals that don't have a chance to win out of the evaluation and to make the rest of the proposals that are close, that are competitive, the opportunity to make them better, you actually get to negotiate during a competition. This is a great thing. You can make all the proposals better and then you reevaluate them again based on the criteria you had before and end up with a better product in the end. So government, this is how, you know, we've already been through this a million times. It's really hard to write a really great RFP that describes exactly what you want. after you get the proposals, that's when you realize, oh, they didn't quite understand what we were looking for. This competitive range determination is the that step that gets you into discussions where you can make proposals better. So it is a good tool to use. What it is not is a chance to help your favorite offeror get better by telling them what the other guys proposed. So this is the people in the government side, they toss around technical leveling. You can't tell one offer another offer's solution so that they can copy it and then win. You can help the other offer improve their own solution, but you can't tell them what the other guy did. You also can't tell prices. You can't tell one guy, hey, company A proposed $100. What are you going to do? But as a result of the competitive range determination, you can help people understand whether their price is relatively too high or too low and let them know why you think that. So the government cares. It's a good tool to use, but it's not a way to fix the competition, right? You still, the proposals are what they are.
It's a great way to improve the competition process.
I wish I would have said it that concisely. So why should industry care? So you touched on this. If you're in the competitive range, it's a chance to make your proposal better. But what you touched on before that struck me was proposals are expensive. The whole process is expensive. If you are eliminated from the competitive range, you're crushed because you lost. But you stop spending money on something you can't win. That's very important. If you're kept in the competitive range, or if they go to discussions with everyone and you don't have a chance to win, then the discussion process, writing a final proposal revision, all that's very expensive. I mean, you're doing the proposal stuff again, some of it. The competitive range determination, if you're eliminated, it sets you free and you're done spending money on something that you can't win.
And it helps you to move on. You need to know what to fight and what to move on from. And if you're eliminated from the competitive range, and okay, assuming that it's somewhat clear why you were taken out and your debriefing gives you the details of why, you know, put aside the cynical answer of, oh, I think it's fixed. Okay, assuming that it's done properly, if you come in with the attitude, and again, I'm preaching here, you come in with the attitude, and remember my story of, I'm going to protest. If that's the first thing that they pick up on,
right?
It doesn't matter what they say, right? You're putting on the defensive, whereas if you come up with the attitude of, if you really don't think I have a chance to win this, tell me why so I can go on to the next thing and stop bothering you.
Yep.
That's a winning strategy for the long term, although it's a really, really hard thing to do in the short term.
I think that's the right way to approach it, that if you are eliminated, it's your chance to learn and move on. We'll talk about what happens if you aren't eliminated in another episode.
Yes, that'll be our negotiations and discussions episode coming up.
All right, I think that's a good point to wrap it up, Kevin. So, listeners, if the podcast is enough for you, that's awesome. If you want more information, if you want more in-depth information on any of these topics, you can join the Skyway Connection community. This is former contracting officers are there to help you learn, collaborate, and grow. You go to skywayacquisition.com/connect, and if you use the promo code podcast, you can try the community for free for a little while.
Yes, and don't forget, my favorite reference is go to iTunes and write us a review because it helps people find us easier. And I appreciate we're up to, I think we're up to over a dozen, but people have been doing that and I appreciate it. And it allows people to find us easier. So the whole idea here is we're giving away this information for free, so please help people find it. And we're also on LinkedIn
LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, he says with a sigh because of the amount of time it takes to be on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. It's a lot of energy there.
I haven't quite figured out the best ROI on those, but that's because I'm kind of a neophyte. So, yeah, moral of the story is if you're really good at this stuff, tell your friends because that's the best way for people to find out about this thing.
One more thing, Kevin. Your book's on Amazon now, right?
Yes, it is. It is on Amazon and also on Smashwords, and you can also get it on our website. And it's called Save Your Time, Why the Federal Market May or May Not Be for You.
All right, great. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right, see ya.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode. As always, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, go to contractingofficerpodcast.com, hit the contact button, and let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.